So would you like us to read both of these items together, Commissioner Saltzman? Okay,
yes.
So if you'd read 1122 and 1123, please.
1122, direct the Portland Housing Bureau to contract for an independent study on the nexus associated with the demand for housing affordable to low and moderate income households created as a result of jobs created by commercial development, and an assessment of the extent to which new market rate housing generates additional demand for affordable housing and the economic feasibility of an affordable housing linkage fee. 1123, amend the tax increment financing set aside for affordable housing policy to ensure continued development, preservation, and rehabilitation of housing affordable to households with incomes below 100% median family income.
Thank you. Well, let me begin with a few remarks, and then I'll turn it over to Commissioner Saltzman, and there are other council members I think who want to comment at the outset as well. On October 7th, this council declared a state of emergency with respect to housing in our city. Other places in the country have followed suit, like the state of Hawaii recently, because there is a national problem of the popularity of cities and therefore the superheated real estate market in cities. And we certainly feel that here. We also feel the forces of change all around us, and can we still be Portland and not become San Francisco in terms of our housing market? And so this whole council is acutely conscious of those pressures and those problems, and we appreciate so much the advocacy from the community on these issues. The commitment that we're looking at here today of urban renewal resources is a really important, tangible commitment by this council towards making that state of emergency something that gets real things done. It's important, and I'm proud of this work that's in front of us today, but it's not sufficient. This is a good proposal to maintain our commitments with urban renewal to the neighborhoods that want to see other changes made there, and also to be serious about committing urban renewal funds to housing. But we all know that the urban renewal source is not sufficient to solve the problems or to even properly address the problems that we see in our housing market. So that's why the Nexus study that Commissioner Saltzman will talk about is important as well. So I just want to appreciate the partnership that we have on this council and in this community on these issues, and also with Multnomah County and Home Forward and the nonprofits who are here today as well. It will literally take all of us working together on these issues to make real progress, and it needs to be made quickly. So with that, Commissioner Saltzman, thank you for your leadership, and take it away.
Thank you, Mayor. Today truly is an historic day for affordable housing in Portland. Today we will take the first steps in creating a new citywide revenue source for the development of new affordable housing, a developer impacts fee. And today we will take our urban renewal involvement in affordable housing to new heights, increasing the set-aside for affordable housing in our urban renewal districts from 30% to 45%. It is painfully obvious that Portland is experiencing unprecedented growth, and with this growth comes many challenges that all of Portland is now wrestling with. We must ensure that our communities, especially communities of color, do not face continued displacement. We must ensure that our seniors are able to remain in Portland close to amenities like transit and social services, as well as their families. We must ensure adequate, affordable housing for our most vulnerable populations. We are tackling these challenges in numerous ways, but the biggest part of the solution is funding, specifically targeted towards affordable housing development. The decisions we make today will help ensure that these new funding streams will add and continually add thousands of new affordable units into our construction pipeline. And before I turn the presentation over to the Housing Bureau, I do want to acknowledge the great work of Mayor Hales in bringing the urban renewal set-aside proposals before us today. And I want to recognize my colleague, Commissioner Fish, for a few remarks as well. And I just want to say that Mayor Hales, after we had the council work session a couple weeks ago, without his sort of getting this across the finish line, I don't think we'd be here today poised, I think, to really create history. So I want to thank you, Mayor, for your great work on this. The proposal that increases the urban renewal set aside from 30% to 45% still protects the economic development commitments that the PDC has made with the other remainder of the urban renewal dollars. And so I think we'll be able to create hundreds of new affordable units and also honor the commitments to economic development and other important infrastructure that urban renewal helps to pay for. And so I'd now like to recognize my colleague, Commissioner Fish, for a few remarks, and then I'll turn it over to Housing Bureau Director Kirk Krieger, who will do an overview of the plans for the Nexus study, the developer impact fee, and then we will have a couple of invited panels. And then Patrick Quinton will also come up from the PDC. So recognize Commissioner Fish.
Thank you very much, Dan. I want to begin by going back in time a little bit to February 26th of this year. And on February 26th, it was the last time that Gretchen Cafori ever came to this building and the last time that she ever spoke to this council. And as everyone in this room knows, Gretchen Cafori spent a life fighting for affordable housing in our community, and you could say that she actually built the foundation of this movement. And on February 26th, she came before us when we were debating whether to increase funding for affordable housing in North McAdam. And she sat where Director Krieger is sitting, and she said two very powerful things. She said, "It is important for you as a council to keep your promises, and I challenge you to do more." And as a result of her advocacy and the advocacy of a whole host of groups, including the League of Women Voters and affordable housing advocates and Oregon On and a whole chorus of voices, the council made a change in policy and significantly increased funding for affordable housing in North McAdam. And I felt at the time that that was a turning point for this council, because a lot of familiar faces came back into this building sensing that things were happening in our community, and they demanded that the council take action. And Gretchen died shortly thereafter, and we all lost a friend. Commissioner Fritz and I lost a mentor. But the question that was, I think, presented in our community was, who was going to pick up her voice? And her voice was very loud and very effective. And the good news is, you picked up her voice. You, the Community Alliance of Tenants, the League of Women Voters, Welcome Home, Oregon On, the Metropolitan Alliance for the Common Good, the faith community, activists in Northeast, Outer East activists, the East Portland Action Plan, all the advisory bodies of the Housing Bureau and PDC. Everyone who's ever lifted their voice and said we need to do more for vulnerable families in our community came together and demanded that we take action. And today is a proud day because it is the culmination of a series of actions taken by this council under the leadership of a mayor who recently announced that housing would be the primary concern of this council for the balance of his term. No mayor in my time has ever said that housing would be the number one concern of the council during his tenure. And Mayor Hales, I applaud you for that announcement. And I thank you for your leadership. And Dan Saltzman, as the Housing Commissioner, I thank you for brokering this deal today, because it required some compromise and give and take. And even with the good relations between PDC and PHB, there were big disagreements about how to get here. And thank you for your steadfastness in getting us to this day. And thanks to the Portland Housing Advisory Commission for unanimously recommending that we do this. They are an important advisory body, and I think this is one of the most important things they've done. And thanks to the Metropolitan Alliance for the Common Good that worked this building and worked the community and demanded that we take action. I'm very proud to be on a council that has said that affordable housing and homelessness is the top concern facing our city. And as Dan said, we're not done. And under the leadership of this mayor and this housing commissioner, we've taken some big steps, but we are not done. And finally, I just want to say that this $67 million is going to be helpful, but as the mayor said, it's not going to solve the problem overnight. And one of the things that I want to work with my colleagues to ensure that as we identify new resources to fight for affordable housing and to end homelessness, that we target those resources to the people with the greatest need. If there ever was a time when we had to target our dollars, the people with the greatest need, it is now. And by declaring a state of emergency and by saying that there is a big problem in our community, we have made a commitment to target the people, to our resources, to the greatest need. And I'm honored to serve in a council that has taken these steps, and today is another proud chapter in a campaign to address the crisis that we face. So thank you to my colleagues, and thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. And as I said, now I'd like to turn it over to Director Kurt Krieger and Matthew Schibold, who will do an overview of the plans for a Nexus study for a developer impact fee. And that is a fee which would be based on the demand that new market rate residential and commercial development creates for low and moderate income housing.
Commissioner, if we have any amendments to submit to either item, should we wait until after the presentation or do it now?
Yeah, that would be preferable. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mayor, members of the Commission. My name is Kurt Krieger, Director of Housing. Matthew Schibold is Director of Policy and Equity for the Housing Bureau. And I'm pleased to present to you our intention to proceed with a Nexus study. We are funding this out of savings in our current year budget, so we're not asking you for any money. but we think it's important enough to raise to your recognition because of the policy implications. You will recall that 2 weeks ago we had a study session about the housing element of the comprehensive plan, the 2015 to 2035 comprehensive plan. Within that housing element, there is some 123,000 housing units contemplated within the city over the next 20 years, a minimum of 10,000 of which need to be permanently affordable, about 8%, which is mirrors the rest of the city in our current permanently affordable stock. So how do we provide adequate funding for that stock? I provided you with a fiscal note, a capital impact assessment at the time, and now we are backfilling that big number with a series of tools. The linkage fee is a means by which the commercial and industrial impacts through new jobs created can be understood, and the housing impacts of those new employment centers and activities can be imputed. It's a little inside sort of baseball, if you will, with respect to housing policy. I was asked by the Business Journal recently about a New Republic story on Colorado. The New Republic claimed that the housing market in Colorado was driven by marijuana sales. And I said, jobs create housing demand. And indeed, there may be some jobs created through agrotourism, perhaps retail sales, perhaps short-term lodging. But in fact, people are coming to Colorado because they have an educated workforce. They have a good business climate. People are coming, as you know, to Portland for many of the same reasons. We have an educated workforce. We have a high quality of life. And therefore, those jobs create housing demands. We want to be able to identify what those housing demands are. And in our PowerPoint presentation, we have an example of a deli where the average wages would likely be $9.25 an hour. I might add that that may be a part-time job rather than a full-time job. But if that were annualized, that deli worker would earn about $20,000 a year. The average rent for an apartment within the same area, the central city, would cost approximately $1,400 a month or $16,800 per year or 87% of their total earnings. I might add that the standard by which housing is deemed affordable is 30% of 30% of income spent on rent and utilities. So this particular household would be paying about 300% more than they should for that housing. So we need a means by which to underwrite the cost of such housing impacts. The other example that I've used is hotel development, which, of course, is very labor-intensive, and those jobs tend to pay between $9 and $15 an hour. So the employment density of the actual economic activity is very important, and the Nexus study will evaluate that. Moreover, it's very important to make sure that we stress test the market feasibility of commercial and industrial properties so that a linkage fee does not render a project infeasible. Nothing is gained if a project is burdened with fees that make it infeasible because it won't proceed. We also want to have a conversation with business stakeholders, including the Portland Business Alliance, about the scope of work for this effort to make sure that people know ahead of time what we're thinking. The idea being that any net revenue that were levied in the form of a fee would inure to the Housing Investment Fund. That Housing Investment Fund is a flexible means by which we underwrite projects. And I want to make sure that you know, since there's been some conflicting press about this, that we have 19 active projects of about 1,650 units. Those are signed deals that are proceeding in good faith with both nonprofit and for-profit owners. We'll come back to you in the next couple of weeks with our multifamily property tax exemption proposals. We have five live proposals presently. There may be more that come in between now and the time we actually present it to you. So we are fully deploying all of our resources. With that sidebar note, the Nexus study basically evaluates the impact of these new jobs, and it imputes the value that might be gained for the Housing Investment Fund. The employment density is quite important, so when you look at other cities, you'll see a range. And the reason that they're looking at ranges is that oftentimes manufacturing is highly automated. You can have a lot of capital improvements, but not very much employment density, therefore the effect on housing demand is quite small, versus retail sales or hotel development, which is much more labor-intensive. range of fees in different jurisdictions, I think, is helpful. Boston and San Francisco have levied these fees for many years. The city of Boston levies a $7.87 per square foot fee on office. Sacramento is a range of 27 cents to 99 cents per square foot. The San Diego fee was just recalibrated in 2014 to range between $1.28 to $2.12. I might add parenthetically that prior to the downturn, San Diego was concerned about their business climate. They cut the fee in half, and then they did not increase it or mark it to any sort of inflationary factor. So they had to reestablish the rate last year, and they did so in 2014. San Francisco, as you know, is an expensive city. It also leads the cities in levying the linkage fee of $16 to $24 per square foot. Of course, there's very little manufacturing left in the city of San Francisco. It's nearly all office. San Jose is levying $17 per square foot. And the Seattle City Council has a proposal that they are deliberating on. Mayor Murray's HALA, Housing Affordability and Livability Agenda, has recommended a range of $5 to $22 per square foot. And in my private practice, I was a consultant to the city of Seattle and did some work for them on the linkage fee. So I might add that Seattle requires legislative authorization, and we don't believe that Portland requires legislative authorization to proceed.
What does that mean?
That means that it's legally, you are legally empowered to levy this in our estimation and in the estimation of the city attorney. That's why we think it's very important to share the scope of work for this Nexus study with the stakeholders prior to coming back to you with a proposal so that people have an understanding of how it may affect their business. And I would add that in the mission of the Bureau is to serve the entire city, and the low and moderate income housing needs the entire city. We'll later discuss tax increment financing, which, as you know, only applies to a maximum of 15% of the city. Practically, it's really more like 12% of the city. So the linkage fee would apply to the balance of the city. We don't think that we have sufficient tools to cover the other 85% of the geographic area of the city and the housing needs of the city. I'd be happy to respond to any questions you might have. We do have a panel that will speak to this issue later.
Is it only on new construction?
Well, I think we'll look at the cost of repurposing or changes of use. Tenant improvements to buildings may apply if there's a certain valuation. I think that's something that's worth looking at. The office building oftentimes will involve gut rehabilitation or major capital improvements, so I think that's worth looking at as to whether or not that would be a trigger or not.
But if a new business starts up in an existing space, would it be?
It would likely not trigger the necessity to pay the fee, especially if it was the same employment classification. If you were taking a vacant commercial building and repurposing it into a boutique hotel, then you might actually have a reason to care about that because the employment density would change. But I think if you're staying within one use, retail use to retail use, it would likely be less of an impact. The timing of the fee is one of the elements that we want to examine, and I don't want to foretell exactly what the triggers would be because we need to make sure that we have a range of alternatives for you to look at.
How long will the study be, and when will you expect to have the results?
We will develop the scope of work and share it with the stakeholders this winter. We would like to procure a consultant first of next year, and we would like to have a draft available by the end of April. The comprehensive plan and your schedule, I think, goes into effect July 1. We want to make sure that this is in place for the implementation of the comprehensive plan.
Dr. Krieger, what in other cities that you've tracked, what kind of revenue has this generated?
Well, it's very robust in San Francisco. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. The city of San Francisco's mayor's office of housing is run by a colleague, Olson Lee, that I know quite well. They also have a voter-approved general obligation bond of $300 million that they're deploying. So it's in the mix of important funding sources for them, but it's not even the largest funding source. Matthew, have you looked at the total? And
depending on the structure of the fee, anywhere between $20 to $30 million a year in comparable cities. With respect to population and households, not the industrial or the economic makeup.
What discussions have you had with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and the Planning and Sustainability Commission in terms of the potential impacts on job creation?
Well, this is embedded in the housing element, and I've raised to the Bureau the interplay between the economic element that you heard yesterday. and from what I understand, most of their study session with you focused on industrial land supply specifically, not necessarily a transaction cost. So we have discussed it, and we have I think it's an open matter of conversation between the bureaus. But the Nexus study is within the plan element that they presented to you already for conversation, so that they've already subscribed to the technique. It's really a matter of fine-tuning the implementation of it.
I hope that when it's done that you'll take it through the Planning and Sustainability Commission as well as the Housing Commission. And that would be very helpful to get their advice.
Very good. I would warrant to say that the PDC will care a great deal about it as well, since they have to market the city as an economic prospect as well.
So if there's no further question on Nexus, I'd like to invite up PDC Executive Director Patrick Quentin to join Kurt and review the plan for the 45% affordable housing set aside.
Slide up another chair there, you guys. There you go.
And Tom Kelly. And then after that, we have two invited panels of, I think, three people each, and then it's open for discussion, debate, amendment.
So this is a refresher. Some of these slides we will go through quite rapidly because you, of course, have had some of this conversation previously. Is it introductions?
Can we just let Tom?
Yeah.
Let Tom.
It's okay. Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. Tom Kelly, the Chair of the PDC Commission. PDC is honored to have worked with the Mayor, Commissioner Salzman, and the Portland Housing Bureau to develop this proposal and make such a significant contribution to address the most pressing problem in Portland, the lack of affordable housing for our residents. As a result of this action, 40% of all urban renewal dollars will have been invested in affordable housing over the 20-year life of the set-aside, and I just want to emphasize that's over the life so that we don't get confused by percentages. While some may believe that this proposal took too long to come to council for a vote, the PDC board and our stakeholders asked for thoughtful consideration of both the trade-offs and priorities and the impact on PDC's long-term sustainability. In the end, we believe this proposal represents a careful balancing of the need for immediate action on our housing crisis and maintaining our commitment to the priorities established with the stakeholders in PDC's urban renewal areas. We hope the energy and advocacy for the more funding for affordable housing continues after the council action. As we all work toward a permanent long-term source for funding for affordable housing. Even with fewer dollars, PDC remains committed to the strategic plan adopted by this council 6 months ago and hopes to engage council in exploring opportunities for our to solidify PDC's financial future. Now I'd like to turn the presentation over to Kurt and Patrick.
Very good. Thank you, Chair. So we itemized the series of actions. I want to remind you that the Portland Housing Advisory Commission started this review. They were mandated by you as a council to do a five-year review, and they did so. They voted unanimously, as previously mentioned. And the current executive committee is chaired by Sarah Zahn, and Dyke Dame is here to speak for the PHAC, and he will do so on the panel. I'd add also that Alyssa Harrigan with Meyer Memorial Trust is also a member of the executive committee. So we have a talented group of committed individuals to help us work through the policy issues. They recommended a minimum 50% set aside in the aggregate across all URAs, which began our earnest review of fund balances with the PDC. They also recommended that we maintain current income targeting. PDC, of course, has had a couple of meetings of their own and has evaluated on a URA by URA basis the effect that it would have on their commitments in the community. And they are very strongly in support of a citywide funding mechanism rather than a mechanism that relies solely on tax increment financing, as mentioned by Chair Kelly. And, of course, they're intensely concerned about the sustainability of the organization, which I certainly respect. So in this last few weeks, we have been meeting daily, basically, working through these issues. And it is recommended by the action before you that we would increase the aggregate to 45% from 30%. And that it would apply on a going-forward basis beginning July 1 of 2015. The calculation within the River District involves an intertie with the U.S. Postal Service property and an ownership interest by the Housing Bureau in cooperation with the PDC, assuming that they are able to come to an agreement with the Postal Service. And if they do not, there'll be an equivalent value of $20 million. From TIF that flows from PDC to the Housing Bureau. And we further underscore our belief that we should leave the current income guidelines in place. The 2015 policy review recommendations, to summarize them in a table form, slide 5, you can see that we have active URAs with the status quo policy in the aggregate 30% set aside, ranging from as low as 18% on the Central East side up to 52% in the South Park blocks. On a going forward basis, looking at the 2006 to 2015 set aside, we were able to achieve 32%. And with this policy review and the URA by URA analysis, we are prepared to go forth with 45%. That increases Lentz, Gateway, Interstate, Central East Side, North McAdam, and the River District. The other three, Downtown Waterfront, the Oregon Convention Center, and the South Park blocks are closed districts, and there's no new debt recommended. So what difference does that make? It has a significant impact, and we think a positive impact. In the Lentz Town Center, would go from $31.6 million, and we would add $7.5 million for nearly $40 million total. Gateway would go from $10.6 million with an additional $2 million for about $12.6 million. Interstate goes from $63.6 million. We add $32 million to Interstate for $95.6 million. Central East Side is status quo at $9.8 million. North McAdam goes from $60 million to $65 million in the aggregate. And the River District goes from $26.5 million with an increase of $20 million, as I mentioned, with an intertie to the U.S. Postal Service property to $46.5 million. So that $66.5 million represents, in total, about a $270 million investment in affordable housing. And we heard you loud and clear in our last study session about the impacts and understanding the impacts at the URA by URA level since commitments had been made by PDC. And Patrick will go through those impacts specifically for you.
So beginning with Interstate is contributing the most to this increase in the set-aside, $32 million, as I mentioned in the work session. Interstate has both a significant amount of debt capacity that we've yet to use and a significant amount of unprogrammed resources. So from a pure line item perspective, we aren't kind of sacrificing any existing priorities. These funds were budgeted in line items that we generally refer to as opportunity funds, so they do represent funds that we might have used for commercial real estate projects and kind of local property ownership projects. And so it will require us as we come across those opportunities to figure out other funding sources to bring to bear on those projects. But generally speaking, as we go through the other urban renewal areas, these funds were the least programmed. In Lentz, we have worked hard to figure out how do we make good on the Lentz action plan and bring forward additional resources to affordable housing. And I think we've done that. And a lot of this, you know, we have conversations in this forum about urban renewal dollars. And part of the frustration is they end up being a moving target a lot because every year we get new information
on property values, and it fades in and out. Sorry, just persevere.
This is the one that Commissioner Novak had before, yeah. Probably. He swapped it out. So in Lentz, we actually believe at this point that we can bring these dollars into the 5-year forecast and continue to meet the obligations under the Lentz action plan, including the money to be invested in what's known as 92H, the 92nd and Herald 3-acre property that PDC owns. What we are sacrificing is money that was projected to be available in out years, you know, after the next 5 years. And the kind of the most specific opportunity is we would have less money to work on kind of addressing the range of issues on Foster Road, east of 205, both relating to the floodplain and the availability of industrial land. It's not zeroed out, but there is we will need to be looking for other resources in out years on that. On Gateway, while it has limited resources, it did have a fair amount of unprogrammed resources. We tried to minimize the impact of this on Gateway because we have heard from a lot of stakeholders that they want us to be able to continue to invest in both, you know, economic development, business development, but also in continue to invest in the infrastructure in the neighborhood. And there was also a concern from David Douglas School District in particular about the impact of adding more households to a district that already has a significant burden on the schools. And so $2 million represents a relatively small amount, and it can likely go into some existing either preservation projects or the existing project that we have underway. River District, actually, Kurt covered this already, and so we still have some work to do in kind of finalizing the agreement between PDC and the Housing Bureau on what level of contribution that the Housing Bureau will be making to the acquisition of the U.S. Postal Service. Session that translates into roughly 600 to 800 units, potential units, basically a land banking strategy, and then the remainder would be money that goes to the set aside directly. As you can see in the presentation, we will probably find it from different line items within the River District, but most likely it will reduce some of the funds that would be available in the out years of the Old Town Chinatown Action Plan. But we will do our best to certainly make that plan whole, either through other funds if we end up with additional money, in the district or through program income. So you know, we have a high level of confidence that we can make good on the objectives of the Old Town Chinatown Action Plan. And then the last one is North McAdam, where, as Commissioner Fish mentioned, we went through a fairly extensive conversation around how to program the funds in the out years of North McAdam River Renewal Area. This adds $5 million more to the affordable housing pot that was established at that time. And what it's really taking from is the additional resources that we projected could be created from the full build-out of the Zidell property, which was, you know, in the neighborhood of, you know, $25 to $30 million. And there was a range of infrastructure and parks projects that are kind of in that speculative part of our forecast. And so this pulls $5 million out of that. And I know that there has been conversations about what this means for projects like the South Portal and others. I would still say that there's a fairly kind of $20 million minimum amount of money, if projections hold, that we can budget probably in future years. I'm not sure that we can really budget at this point in time, future years to make progress on, whether it be South Portal, whether it be the completion of bond all the way through to the Central District, or whether it be completion of a parks project. Yeah, there will be a pot of money, roughly $20 million plus, that we can talk about at that time. But there will be a shortfall in North McAdam in the out years. I guess the last thing I would say on that is that there was always going to be a shortfall given the needs for the infrastructure in the district and the completion of kind of the master plan for open space. And so this just makes the shortfall somewhat larger. So I think that's it for the presentation.
Okay. Yes, questions, please.
So I'd like to ask a few clarifying questions. There were a lot of scribes in getting this ordinance pulled together, and Shannon and Dan's office, and Mayor, you had someone working on it, Housing Bureau, PDC, Jillian worked on it. So there were a lot of people crafting this, and there were a number of concerns that I had. I want to make sure they're clearly embedded in this draft language and make sure it's clear. So the first question I have is on the question of lengths and the sense of the council that we want to hold them harmless in relative terms. Are you recommending as part of this that you're going to either extend the life of the district or increase the indebtedness? And when would that action come back to council?
It's a separate action.
So it was obvious, it was an important part of the conversation. It's not obviously not part of this action. We would, I think PDC would recommend that the council consider that action.
Which of the two that I, what would we
say? The extension of the life of the urban renewal area by an additional 2 years to access the what we project to be leftover maximum indebtedness, roughly $15, $16 million at this point. So we would recommend that. I don't know that it has to be addressed in the next month or 2 months, but within the next year, I think council should come back to this issue so that the folks in Lentz do have some certainty on those resources.
Mayor, that's your intent.
It is my intention to do that. Yeah, and I don't think we have to wait a long time, but we can get it right and bring it forward.
Okay, so that I appreciate all the effort that's gone into clarifying that. The second has to do with where we focus these new dollars. And we have a letter of support from Multnomah County Chair Deborah Cafori specifically calling out the deficit in the 0 to 30 area of our housing production. We actually even have a letter here that I read as a qualified support from the Portland Business Alliance. And if you take out the qualifying sentence, it is support. If you add the qualifying sentence, I'm not sure. But the let's talk about where this money goes. In the draft ordinance, in the recitals, number 8, it specifically says that we are falling short in meeting our goals in 0 to 60. Director Krieger, is that correct?
Yes, overall it is.
And within 0 to 60, are we also falling short in 0 to 30?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, so we've specifically called that out in this ordinance. And then in the resolve, it says in sub C that as the Housing Bureau develops a proposal that you'll come back to council for consideration, you will take into account the unmet goals in each urban renewal area. And do you understand that to be primarily at 0 to 60 of MFI?
I think it's meant to be the full spectrum, frankly. Everything should be on the table. We need to look at the opportunity to do preservation of existing market affordable units that are subject to conversion, provide assistance to those owners to renovate those properties, and perhaps a challenge to those owners by matching their equity investment. We also need to look at new build opportunities. And, of course, in Lentz, we have made investments in both Palindrome at the New Copper Penny and in Williams and Dame development for their development on PDC-owned land.
I'm glad we're having this conversation because this language was inserted at my request, and I will tell you what my intent was. It was to focus on the area of greatest need, and that is 0 to 60. And ultimately, any recommendation comes back to council for approval, and that's clear that once you have had a public process and taken into consideration the need, it will be decided ultimately by this council through the budget process. But, Director Krieger, I want to be very clear. The reason I asked this language to be inserted was I wanted to focus on the area of the greatest need.
Understood.
And I appreciate that your job is also to preserve as much flexibility in meeting this range of needs. But that was the reason for the recital and the resolve, to focus on the unmet need, which I understand is primarily at families of four making $22,000 or less below
Correct.
The poverty line. So I just want to give you my interpretation of the language.
And I think to reinforce that, yesterday, as you may well know, we issued a notice of funding availability for $61.5 million with a focus under 60% of AMI. So we are currently employing your preferences with current money, and we would apply those preferences on a going forward basis. But we do want to have that conversation with every URA because they have slightly different needs and requirements.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. And I guess the thing that we're going to struggle with is this is $67 million of new money to address a housing emergency where we are limited by the tool, that is, it's urban renewal money, but we are trying to address a citywide problem. And so the reason this comes back to us in the budget process is the council wants the flexibility to address the crisis. And the crisis is not necessarily line up with the individual priorities of every district. And since this is a citywide concern, we want the flexibility to be able to look citywide. And the final question I have is, the mayor has, I think, correctly identified a sense of urgency about this. So we were discussing the need to make sure these dollars are front-loaded. One of the problems with urban renewal is it takes time sometimes for the dollars to be generated. Under this plan, are these dollars essentially front-loaded?
Yes. So we've done our best to model out how all these resources can be available in the next 5 years. And so I'm just going to pause because the only question was whether the availability of the funds in North MAC, but I think even that we've figured out. So in year five, I think we will make available the additional money in North McAdam.
So. And that's just so everyone understands, that's fine because there's enough money already in North McAdam for Dan to proceed on the current project he's working on and a second project, that would actually help fund a third project.
Right. And I think, well, Kirk can talk to this more directly, but the near-term money in North McAdam, the next wave, actually could help in terms of taking down the parcel of land on the Zidell property that's been negotiated. And it was kind of always questioned, okay, you've negotiated this, but will you have the money to actually purchase it? And so that actually might be the case now.
Thank you very much.
May I just ask a clarifying question then about Lentz? I thought you said that we were going to continue to be doing the Lentz action plan items as a priority. So going to prioritize both housing and?
Yeah, I mean, so urban renewals, we give ourselves 20 years to issue the debt. The pace at which we can issue debt is driven by two factors. One is, do we have the projects to spend the money on, and do we have the growth and assessed value to do that? And so as we've looked at our projections on both, we see the demand for the dollars, obviously, and we see that you know, working with OMF, that we actually can bring that money forward, is what we say it, as within that five-year period. So it means we're borrowing more over the next 5 years than we had projected to.
But not impacting any of the economic development and not impacting the potential projects along Foster?
So I think those get pushed back in terms of timeline. They were, you know, within the action plan, there was far more specificity around projects like 92nd and Herald. And the Foster Road work is has a lot of unknowns to it. So that was always farther out. But yes, that is what suffers in terms of a timeline. And it would be the area where we would could most use the additional, accessing the additional debt at the end of the life of the district. So that would necessarily mean that it goes past the 5 years. In our conversations with stakeholders, and a bunch of us were all there last night, they all expressed kind of comfort with that trade-off. There was far more of a concern for how this proposal impacted projects in the town center, in particular 92nd and Herald. And so I think that seems to be a trade-off that they're willing to make.
So I hope there's some folks from Lentz, because I'm particularly interested in that timing
okay.
question.
Yep.
Okay, well, thanks.
Go ahead.
So I think we actually, I mentioned two mini panels. I think we can consolidate them into one panel if we can find one other chair. So I'd like to now bring up Dyke Dame, who is a member of the Portland Housing Advisory Committee. He's also a housing rabble-rouser in general. Portland Housing Advisory Commission, excuse me. Rita Delamatri of the Metropolitan Alliance for Common Good, the organization that led the charge to increase the renewal set aside. Yeah, if we can get five chairs.
Thanks, Patrick.
Bishop Stephen Holt, the chair of the North Northeast Oversight Committee. Ray Espana, who is another member of the Portland Housing Advisory Commission. And then finally, Martha McLennan of Northwest Housing Alternatives. Great. Why don't we start with Dyke, Portland Housing Advisory.
My goodness, to be described as a rabble rouser.
You are. You are.
First off, I want to thank you, Commissioner Saltzman and Mayor Hales, for giving me the opportunity to serve on the Portland Housing Advisory Committee and now being one of the three members on the Executive Committee. It's been a pleasure to interact with the other members of the committee and an honor to serve with them, and it's also very enjoyable to see the good work of the excellent people that you have performing the service at the Housing Bureau, Director Krieger, Matt, Javier, and the many others. I just think they're doing a great job. My background lends a little bit to the rabble-rousing. I grew up in a war housing project in Paterson, New Jersey. I understand some of this stuff. That was 61 years ago, though, when I left there. So serving in this committee has been a very rewarding experience for me, as I said, and also a good reminder of how difficult it can be to live under those kind of circumstances. So you're addressing two issues today, tax increment and, I'll use an abbreviated term, linkage fee. The TIF, to me, is a no-brainer. I hope you're going to do that. You know the Housing Bureau fought, if you will, hard to keep the 50% on two different occasions. I think the 45 being a 50% increase over the existing 30% to enable PDC to continue with the rest of its good work is a good compromise, and life is all about compromise. And so I would certainly, along with other members on PHAC, encourage you to approve that. Probably long-term, more importantly, is the linkage. And as I think Kurt will tell you, the first time he and I met, we discussed two things. We discussed increasing the TIF, and we discussed linkage and or inclusionary housing. I understand inclusionary housing is a different, difficult issue in this state and would require legislative action, so I think you're taking the correct course by studying linkage, if you will, or charging a per square foot for various developments to generate affordable housing funds. I think it's the right course to do. I know that our PHAC group certainly supports it, and we all would encourage you to vote unanimously for it. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, Doug.
Thank you.
Rita Delamatre, did I pronounce your last name correctly?
Yes.
Okay, of the Metropolitan Alliance for Common Good.
Yes, good afternoon. I am here on behalf of MACG, and we are particularly happy to be speaking to you today in favor of a proposal to substantially increase the TIF housing set aside to 45%. Of course, we hoped to attain more, but we do want to acknowledge your efforts and those of the Housing Bureau and PDC to step up creation of affordable new homes for hundreds more families in the next years. These families in deep crisis fall heavily within the 0 to 60% MFI range, and we urge you to press all involved to move up production of highly affordable units at every opportunity, engaging the creativity of staff and community for completion of as many units as possible within the next few years. We also hope that all involved will remain mindful and committed to 45% as a floor with the intent to exceed that minimum whenever possible. As we move through the implementation process, MACG looks forward to further engagement with officials, community partners, and developers for better effectiveness, transparency, reporting, and accountability. From the local level to the state level, we are excited to forge partnerships to creatively engage and overcome this crisis and secure a safe, healthy, and just community where everyone has a chance to create a life without constant fear of eviction, calamity, and homelessness. From our first proposal at the PHAC's July meeting through our press conference assembly before your October 13th work session, we have insisted that crisis requires swift and significant action. Although the TIF increase is a small advance in this crisis, taking this first step now is critical for Portland and will be life-changing for the hundreds of vulnerable residents who will find the refuge and springboard that affordable housing provides. We understand that reassignment of funds to affordable housing in urban renewal areas may come at a cost to other budgets, but trade-offs are expected in a meaningful response to emergency, and there are other costs we want you to bear in mind: the costs of upheaval and even homelessness on the lives of struggling and vulnerable adults and children who find themselves unexpectedly displaced or dispossessed, such as Francia, a resident of the Interstate URA, who will share her story a little later today. The long-term public cost to parks, transportation, and public safety. These important programs may experience short-term cuts or delays with respect to funding the housing emergency, but those will be known costs that can be planned for. The longer we take, though, to meaningfully address the burgeoning housing crisis, the greater the unintended costs to local governments for parks, transportation, and safety, spiraling costs in both budget impacts and lost ground on critical goals. Add to those the public costs of damage control from the well-known difficulties with health, education, and chronic poverty suffered by families without stable housing, and we cannot afford not to pass and exceed this new floor. Portland is a beautiful city. I'm proud to call it home. But the eruptive boom of our local real estate market follows the trajectory of other West Coast cities as market forces erase the diversity and equity of Portland's neighborhoods, relegating to only the very fortunate the livability and sense of place built by all. All of us here in this room, organizers, advocates, allies, and elected officials, are called to serve the interests of all the people in the city. And right now, the crucial need is to vigorously preserve and develop more homes where people can feel secure and grow. It is important that we deliberately make space an opportunity for residents of all incomes, not only to live, but to thrive in areas well connected to public transportation, grocery stores, parks, and schools, and not turn away as vulnerable residents are pushed out of their communities and dispersed to remote parts of the metro area. This is not a theoretical question of symbolic representation today. This is the real work of equity and justice. Thank you.
Thank you. Bishop Stephen Holt, who is the chair of our North Northeast Oversight Committee, and Bishop, we've just pushed that button at the base there. No, there's no red light on.
Ray, can you turn yours off?
Oh, maybe that's it.
Okay,
there you go.
Here we go.
There you go.
Very good. Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good
First of all, I just wanted to express appreciation for the responsiveness of this leadership to the housing crisis, and that some creative process was put in place to rapidly and tangibly do something of significance to address it. The TIF set aside being increased to 45% is tremendous, in that it is a 50% increase above the present amount. Of course, I think all of us had hoped it would be a 50% increase, but we're glad for a 45%. And thanks to the co-sponsors, thank you, Mayor, Commissioner Saltzman, and Commissioner Fish, for the work on this process. I also want to express appreciation for the directors of PDC and PHB and their ability to create positive partnership to utilize uncommitted and unprogrammed funds as it relates to this. As the chair of the Oversight Committee, the foresight and intent to develop the Oversight Committee with the purpose of keeping accountability and transparency for the city's efforts around affordable housing is proving to be of great value. Our primary focus and concern is to ensure that what has been undertaken is accomplished with efficiency, effectiveness, equity, and as promised. The promises made become the promises kept. To that extent, Portland Housing Bureau created a structure to ensure that the funds utilized in the manner the community states that their needs are, that they're met. I would like to ask the council to consider increasing the scope of the Oversight Committee with additions to membership representing the North Portland, St. John's area to be included around these additional funds. I also recommend that the preference policy that's being developed become the standard for how people gain access to programs in North and Northeast Portland. I recognize that certain circumstances will require exceptions, such as Bridge Meadows, which the Oversight Committee also supports. The need continues to be expansive, as has been mentioned by the mayor, several commissioners, both directors of PDC and PHB. Long-term strategies must be developed to assist those who have needs that don't fit within the present boundary or function of the areas that are being studied. There are countless or have been countless individuals who are just outside these areas who have needs. And as we think about creating a livable Portland, we must address how best to serve our citizens who are in need. So,
thank you. Thanks very much.
Ray Espana, another member of the Portland Housing Advisory Committee.
Thank you. Mayor Hales, commissioners, it's always a blessing to be in front of you. I just want to lend my voice as a commissioner, as well as the role I play at NAIA as the developer of 40 units of Generations Housing and Family Housing in Lentz. I just want to reinforce and be brief on three points, and I really appreciate the words I've heard today. The actions before you require bold and courage. I think you're up to it. I expect that. I wanted to just focus in, though, on some pressures that have not been spoken about too much today, and that is the threat of displacement that's occurring, the pressures of destabilizing families and forcing them out of a stable housing for landlords who would like to take advantage of increasing rents. So, in fact, you take somebody that's stably housed and move them out, move them on. We need some protection, some tools, but the threat of displacement and the subsequent actions need to be addressed. Those individuals that I'm speaking about are heading eastward, toward outer southeast, out toward mid-county, out toward Gateway, out that way. That's occurring today. So while I appreciate the effort to address TIF resources, and I support the action, that only applies on a very specific, limited part of geography. I understand completely the desire to take on the issue of housing the crisis on a citywide basis. Those tools do not exist today. I think we have to work harder, faster to get those tools in place. I think I've heard the words of special communities. Unfortunately, you know, I would lend my voice to seeing the tale of two cities. those that have and those that do not have. That divisiveness based on economics, we've made a pretty good data case of the growing disparities of those communities of color in this regard. So the look at the special needs of children, specifically children of color, families,